Welcome to the Real Vision Daily Briefing. It's Thursday, July 29, 2021. I'm Ash Bennington, joined today by Real Vision's Jack Farley and our guest, Jared Dillian of the Daily Dirt Nap. Welcome, gentlemen. Stories we're looking at today: Robinhood IPO'd today, priced at $38 a share. Current price looks like $34.60, closed at $34.82, off about 8.37% on the day opening, continuing to drop, looks like a little bit marginally here in after hours trading after the bell. Talking of Robinhood and meme stocks, 39-year-old billionaire and former chairman of Nikola, Trevor Milton, charged with federal securities and wire fraud today in the Southern District of New York. Milton taken into custody today, pleading not guilty to all charges. Jack, I understand you're looking at econ data. What are you seeing today?
Well, first, Ash, I want to say I wonder if Trevor Milton is still a billionaire. Let's check that out. But yeah, I'm looking at two data points, Ash, that came out today. One is the second quarter gross domestic product for the United States, which at an annualized rate came to 6.5%, much below the 8% that was the median forecast by economists. So, you know, not great news for the economy. Likewise, initial jobless claims came in higher than estimated. The estimate was 380,000. They came in at 400,000. That is for the week. So, two points of news, Ash, that are don't indicate particular, you know, a robust economic recovery. However, on the news, U.S. equities slid higher, and really globally, equities had a very good day. Nothing to complain about. And in fact, China, you know, staunched some of last week's bleeding with the Hang Seng index up 3.3%. However, the CraneShares KWeb Chinese Tech Index remains 50% below its highs of February this year. Ash, what else is on your radar?
Yeah, maybe the bad news was bad enough to be good news. I don't know. We'll talk about that more later. Also, finally, today, part four of the Real Vision interview, Kirill Sokolov talking to Kathy Wood of ARK, available now to Real Vision subscribers. Let's pull in our guest, Jared Dillian. Jared, welcome to the show.
Hey, what's up?
How are you, man? Good. So, Jared, what are you looking at today? Is this like a good news is bad news, kind of a Goldilocks thing? We're not looking at too much inflation. What do you think about what's happening?
I saw some crazy stuff on Twitter this morning. You know, GDP missed by a lot, but it's still 6.5%. You know, I mean, it's still a big number. And I saw a guy say that 6.5% GDP print meant that we were having stagflation. Okay. And the whole stagflation thing just kills me, because you got these guys like, I think they secretly want stagflation because it's the worst possible outcome. So they have like sweaty palms and a woody, just like pretending that we're going to have stagflation. Like, if we're printing 6.5 GDP, that's not stagflation. I mean, this, we're having inflation, but it's a very different type of inflation that we had in the 1970s. So, you know, if you're going to be concerned about any of the data today, the claims miss by a little bit. I mean, we really need to be seeing claims around 300 to make any progress in getting the unemployment rate down. So the persistently high claims is not a good sign.
Yeah, Jack, jump in. I know you've got some thoughts on this.
Sure. Well, I'll briefly explain what I think you mean, Ash, when you say the good news is bad news. Economic data that is great actually forces the Fed's hand to stop intervening, either by tapering its balance sheets or ultimately raising rates. So you want something that's not horrible data, but not great data either. And that's what I think you were referring to.
I don't even know anymore, Jack. Like 8.5% would have been just like rip roaring hot, right? You'd have to think that that would look like inflationary pressure. But to Jared's point, 6.5%, still very strong growth, extremely strong growth.
Yeah, Ash, I'm going to have to repeat the refrain that it's an expectations game. Let's put a chart up of the actual histogram of the economist estimates in the Bloomberg estimates, and they ranged, you know, all the way from 5.8 to 11.4 for this quarter over quarter growth. And as you can see, the median estimate was 8.5%. So it was much below that at 6.5%. So even though 6.5% is high, it still was much below expectations.
Jared, what do you think in terms of this expectations game? How do you rank it? How do you balance it out?
Well, I mean, you know, in terms of what you said before about this being sort of a Goldilocks print, I mean, you're actually right. Like in a lot of cases, it was, you know, because it, look, like I don't think this particular GDP number would have really changed any outcome for the Fed as to whether they would get any closer to tapering or not. I don't think this one number really means anything. But sure, like in the minds of investors, if it comes in a little bit soft, then the thinking is that they won't be in as big of a hurry to taper. So you saw gold up a lot today. Today, gold really broke out. If you look at the chart of gold, just zoom out about a year, and it's a very nice rounded bottom, and it started to head higher. The growth value trade bottomed 3 or 4 days ago, and now you're starting to see value act very well. So I think, you know, we had a period of about a month or two where rates were dropping and we had this deflation trade, but I think it's finally reversed.
Yeah. Jack?
Yeah, I want to ask Jared, what are your thoughts on real rates? I believe the 10-year TIPS rate is negative 1.13. So that's what you're getting net of inflation from the U.S. government. Of course, gold is very inversely related to real rates. Do you think that that will prove, you know, fertile ground for gold to go much, much higher?
I mean, if you look at charts of gold and real rates, it kind of lines up. I'm a trader. I just look at this on a technical basis. Today was a strong, impulsive move in gold, which was kind of a surprise. And I think people are going to follow it higher.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's talk a little bit, Jared. I was reading Daily Dirt Nap. You were talking about catching falling knives. Some interesting framework and philosophy here that you were putting forward. How do you think about that in relation to what you're seeing right now in markets?
Well, I mean, what everybody's trying to do is pick a bottom in Chinese internet stocks. You know, I actually got an email from a Lehman buddy today, and he said that yesterday he sold puts in KWEB, right? So this is like, these are the
By the way, what's KWEB for people who don't know?
KWEB is the Chinese internet ETF. Okay. So, you know, this is the type of stuff I would do in my 20s. I'd be at Lehman Brothers and something would be cratering and I would try to pick a bottom. Okay. And the problem is that in the stock market, bottoming isn't a moment. It's a process, right? It's a process. It takes months. So over time, you know, let's say you tried to call the bottom in KWEB, it's going to bounce and you'll feel smug, and then it will go back down and it'll retest the lows and it'll make a lower low, then it'll bounce again, then it'll make another low, and this is going to continue for months. And it's very difficult to try to pick a bottom. So as I've gotten older, what I do is if I see something that's cratering and I'm interested in it, I wait for that bottoming process to happen. And I wait for it to form a very long base, and then I wait for it to turn higher. So it takes a great deal of patience. And the problem is that nobody has any patience. You know, nobody has any patience with this stuff.
By the way, I have to quote Jared Dillon. If you didn't read today's Daily Dirt Nap, the title of the piece is "There Are No Old Bold Traders." And the quote is, "Remember, trading is 90% waiting, 9% research, and 1% putting on the trade."
Yeah. And by the way, the old bull traders thing, this is the full quote. I couldn't fit it in the title, but the full quote is there are old traders and there are bold traders, but there are no old bull traders.
Yeah. Jack, jump in.
I love the phrase to catch a falling knife, referring to something that is assets that's falling, you know, very rapidly. And you buck the trend by buying it. Jared, you write, however, that you are, there's no knife catching in KWEB over here. That's a rookie mistake. Just walk us through. So you're against knife catching in general, or is it something particularly in KWEB?
Both.
In China?
Both, actually. It's really more the former. I'm against knife catching in general. You know, I actually used to be pretty good at it, but I had a couple of times where I wasn't. You know, for China in particular, you know, I think it was a couple of days ago, I wrote the issue where I talked about the fact that we avoided Chinese internet stocks in the newsletter for the exact reason that they're crashing, because private property rights do not exist in China. And there was the potential for government interference. So I said, this stuff is uninvestable and we never bought any of it.
Yeah, I think there's the issue. Sorry, Ash, there's the issue of if you are a Chinese national and you live in China, they may have their own questions about what do they own. But then if you're a foreign investor in China, you have to buy it via an American depository receipt that's in the Cayman Islands through something called a VIE or a variable interest entity. So it's very unclear what you actually own and what you actually don't own. Jared, so reading from yesterday's Daily Journal, you wrote that that Cathie Wood is pulling the ripcord on everything related to China. And you're absolutely right. If you go through, you know, Cathie Wood's ARK ETF, that ETF publishes its purchases and sales every single day, very transparent. And Cathie Wood is doing exactly that. Ash, as I'm sure you know, you're can tell us about, Cathie is did an interview with Kirill Sokolov on Real Vision that spans the entire week. Today, part four came out, and she actually talked to us about that. Ash, you want to set that up?
Yeah, let's just jump in and take a look at the clip. In fact, very apposite here about China.
All I know is the way China's behaving very defensively is anathema to the rest of the world, and probably not to the pleasing of its own population. You know, there's a bit of a stifling going on here. And certainly anyone with dreams of becoming a unicorn with more than a million users is going to have second thoughts, because the government is basically putting them on watch. You know, I don't know. I don't think you encourage entrepreneurship that way.
I mean, kind of ominous there, Jack. What are your thoughts?
Definitely ominous. Cathie is pulling out. Jared has never invested in China. Jared, I wonder, what did you say to your buddy at Lehman Brothers when he told you that he was selling puts against KWeb, against these Chinese tech stocks, and in essence, selling insurance, betting that it wouldn't further crash? His timing has been good since he did it, what, 2 days ago, and we've had a little bit of a bounce back. If you were in this person's shoes, would you unwind that position?
Yeah, I mean, that's essentially a swing trade. That's a short-term trade. I would take that off immediately. Let me put it this way. I don't think Cathie Wood sold the lows, okay? I think she was smart to get out of China.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I was watching Bloomberg before we went on the air today, and there was an analyst on, he was talking about something related to tech stocks, and he said, I hear Cathie is buying. So Cathie Wood is now like Cher or Sting or Madonna. She's mononymous. She's just one word. She's just. And for those Real Vision subscribers, of course, you can check out all of these parts as we release them. And on Friday, I believe it's like 2.5 hours long, the full interview with Kirill. Is that right, Jack?
I think so. We've released them in pieces, but the whole enchilada is airing tomorrow.
The whole enchilada out tomorrow. Jared, let's talk a little bit more about what's on your radar. What else are you looking at that we haven't covered?
Here's the problem. Okay. I'm usually very good at building a portfolio. It's something I take pride in, and I build a portfolio with a lot of different uncorrelated assets, offsetting pieces. And that's really the way to generate alpha over time. But the problem is that now I've constructed this portfolio that is basically one factor. It's the inflation factor. And so if bonds go up, the portfolio goes down. If bonds go down, the portfolio goes up. So I have a short bond portfolio. I might as well just be short bonds. I might as well just sell everything and like sell 10-year note futures. Ultimately there's two sides to this trade, and I think I'm on the right side, but I don't like being whipsawed by this price action.
Jared, can you talk a little bit about that construction? What is it effectively like, short bond proxies in the equity market? What's the structure look like?
Of my portfolio?
Yeah.
I have land REITs, I have insurance companies, I have office REITs, I have basic materials, energy. It's all inflation related stuff. And that worked. That worked for a long time, you know. But I can tell you, I actually looked at my numbers today, and over the past 2 months, I took a 6% drawdown. From top to bottom, I took a 6% drawdown, which is not really pleasant.
Yeah, but Jared, that's not that bad. You know, I think of you as someone who's very bullish on energy, and I know XLE or ExxonMobil or whatever has had way bigger drawdowns than that. So I guess your diversification within the inflation trade has protected you from some of those more severe losses. And of course, the inflation trade was just up such an absurd amount earlier this year that, you know, anytime you go up, you're kind of borrowing returns from the future. So you expect these things. But
Jack, you sound like a mean reversionist.
Maybe I am a little bit. You know, Jared's a value guy, so I think that's inherent, right, to the value trade is mean reversion.
Yeah.
So Jack, what do you think? Should we jump into questions here?
Oh, yeah, let's take one. I mean, there are a lot of topics that we could throw at Jared, but yeah, let's take a question.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times, and stuff is just digestible on its infinite online canvas.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro. Easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people creating technical diagrams without workflow glitches. Get your first 3 boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
Here's a quick one to hit from Christopher Yip from the Exchange here at Real Vision. Question for Jared. You recently tweeted, quote, "I was wrong about Bitcoin, at least on a short-term basis." Is this basis based on price action in your view, or are you seeing changes in sentiment?
It's really based on technicals. You know, we had this magnificent head and shoulders top that looked perfectly symmetrical, and we were consolidating around $30,000, and I thought we were going to head lower to $10,000. And simply what happened is, because of the Amazon news, Bitcoin broke trend, right? And I wasn't short. The only exposure I had was MicroStrategy puts, okay? But... yeah, it's broke trend. So now my opinion has changed and I'm kind of neutral. I don't have to have an opinion all the time. And that's where I am right now.
Yeah. So you bought the MicroStrategy puts.
Yeah.
You know, interesting. This is a very contentious question, whether or not the driver was Amazon or some of the things that were happening with Tether on news coming out of Bloomberg, that there's an ongoing investigation out of Department of Justice. Interesting angle and one that obviously you never have full transparency on, even with on-chain data.
Well, the one thing I will say, and I follow sentiment very closely, and I should have picked up on this, the chatter on Tether was reaching, it was getting very loud. It was getting very loud. The bears on Tether, how it was going to break the peg. I mean, I was constantly seeing that in my Twitter feed. And what I should have done was I should have perked up and said, you know, actually, I think this is, you know, it kind of reminded me of Tesla Q. You know, back like a year and a half ago when Tesla was trading around 180 and the Tesla Q guys were getting louder and louder, it was the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. The interesting thing is this sort of almost counterintuitive relationship, at least at the surface level, between the price of Bitcoin and negative rumor or negative speculation on Tether. People offshore who don't have access to US dollar denominated banking, who own Tether, in theory, so the thesis goes, have no choice but to move out of it if they feel that they're bearish on it, if they fear there's a risk of breaking the peg. So they move into Bitcoin. Kind of a paradoxical relationship there, particularly for people who are new to the space.
Yeah, I mean, as a U.S. investor, I don't really have any experience with it. I only know what I read. So,
yeah.
Jared, I've got a question. We've had a week of remarkable earnings from Apple, Facebook, Microsoft, Google, Tesla, and all the other, you know, McDonald's, Starbucks. Have any of them stood out to you? And do you have any thoughts on them?
No, I mean, you know, the general takeaway is that they've all been good. You know, I'm hoping that trend continues. I mean, this is kind of a rare time when I actually have a directional bias in the market. I don't really have much in the way of shorts. So for the first time in a very long time, I find myself rooting for stocks, which is unusual for me, you know?
Right. Yeah. That makes sense. I think one thing I noticed was that it's not about you know, it was still possible to beat the earnings number and beat really the whisper number too, and still have, you know, not excellent performance. I think Facebook reported something like $81 billion in quarterly revenue, and it went down on that news. It really only was Google that, you know, was able to surge something like 3 or 4% on its absolutely stunning earnings per share.
By the way, talking about stunning, I'm looking here, crossing the wire right now. Pinterest is getting smacked. Apparently, they were down 6% on the day, off another 14% after hours. That's just in the last 19 minutes. Missed kind of on a wide variety of metrics. And apparently, they are declining to provide 3Q MAUs. These are monthly active users guidance due to, quote, unknown impact on COVID-19 variants. This coming out of CNBC.
Yeah, interesting that a tech company that's, you know, there has no real exposure to the real world. Like, you think if people are locked at home, that would be good for the stock.
Yeah. What are you doing?
I mean, it's more than doubled, Ash, over the past year. So it's, you know.
Yeah. And I suspect it's probably advertiser dollars and relationships. But we'd have to dig in it to find out.
Right. But just interesting. Do you want to talk about Robinhood?
Yeah, let's talk about Robinhood.
Let's do it.
Jack, kick it off. What are your thoughts?
Do you want to set me and Jared up? I feel like you were the one who introed it.
Well, yeah. So Robinhood is basically stabilized in after hours trading. Obviously listed today, $38 a share. Now trading at $34.71 off. Aggregate that after hours and day trading today looks like around almost 9%. Not exactly what you want to see when you are an early investor in an IPO. What are your thoughts on it, Jared?
Well, you know, I'm not sure I'd want to buy stock in an IPO of a company whose entire business model might disappear in a couple of months. I mean, the whole payment for order flow model, I mean, Gensler's looking at it. Things might radically change for payment for order flow, and that's where they get a decent chunk of their revenues. You know, but when I look at Robinhood, I mean, it's a ridiculous company, you know, but aside from that, they incinerate cash. And, you know, if you look at the business, you know, where they get their sources of revenue from margin lending to securities lending to payment for order flow, they don't get commissions. Like, I don't see how they can really ever be profitable. I saw some comment fly by today about how they were going to use the app for some other purpose. I don't know what that means, but none of this really sounds good to me.
Yeah. Jack, what are your thoughts?
Well, I have to say it's a stark contrast of the, you know, Robinhood pricing at $38 per share, which was the low end. I think the range that the market makers were 38 to 43, and then dipping, $4 since then. That's a stark contrast to a lot of the IPOs that we've been used to, such as Coinbase. Remember that fervor that we had a few months ago? I would say that the multiples, price to sales multiple on Robinhood are richly priced, and it's richly priced compared to where it was even trading 4 months ago in private markets. I would say, Jared, I do think that the business of having first-time users buy options on Robinhood and essentially have the person who's on the other side of the trade be Citadel, you know, I think that's extremely profitable for Citadel, and I think that they pay Robinhood a pretty penny. So I think, you know, they get 70% of their money from payment for order flow, and that may be wrong, and it may be outmoded within a few months, but I think it inherently could be a somewhat profitable business.
Let me jump in here. Robinhood, the average account balance, I think the median account balance is $250. So if this was like 1996 and you were looking at brokerage stocks, if you were looking like at Schwab and Ameritrade and stuff like that, like these are unprofitable accounts. Like, they wouldn't want those accounts, but these $250 accounts are the basis for all of Robinhood's business.
It seems like thin margins, low average ticket prices on this that they're writing, and also you have to ask yourself, like, If those numbers are right and your model is basically retail investors, you know, with $250 in their account trading against Citadel on derivatives contracts, like, they're going to get slammed. Who wants to do that? Like, it's like walking into a casino that you never win at. Like, why would you keep playing that game?
They can win sometimes, and I don't know, casinos have historically been a pretty profitable business, right?
Not for the gamblers, Jack, for the house.
Yeah, but in the house is Citadel, I guess, in this case, and they pay the finder's fee to, like, you know, bring whales into their markets. And I think that, you know, the stock market does go up generally, so...
They don't bring in whales, they bring in paramecium.
What is that? I've never heard of that word.
It's like a little.
Yeah.
It's like a single-celled organism. Yeah, and there was also I think it was Charlie Gasparino, my old friend at Fox Business, who broke a story last night about the fact that Robinhood may be planning to go into the order matching business. There's just a lot of uncertainty around this.
A lot of uncertainty, but you can certainly find worse stocks.
I don't know. This is a candidate for one of the worst. I think Robinhood will be trading in the 10 handle in a year.
That may be so, but it may be a buying opportunity at $10.
Yeah. Interesting.
Let's move on to the next story, which is that the founder and former CEO of Nikola Corp, the electric truck company that went public last year in a SPAC, is now in jail. Ash, tell us about this.
Yeah, he's currently in federal custody, pleaded not guilty, we should point out, through his attorneys. But the allegation is that the quote was that I believe from federal prosecutors, I don't want to get it wrong, but the substance was he lied about something like, quote, every aspect of his business.
I got it. I'm sort of paraphrasing from a Matt Levine piece I have in front of me today. But he lied about Nikola being able to produce a zero emission vehicle. He lied about whether the truck worked. He lied about whether major components of the truck were made in-house. He lied about whether the trucks were actually coming off the assembly line. And he lied about a video where it made it seem like the truck was actually driving when, in fact, the truck was only going because it was rolling down a hill.
Yeah, look, we can itemize the list of all the things he lied about, but the bottom line is, according to the allegations of prosecutors, he basically said, look, we got a working prototype here, right? We have an actual truck that runs. And the reality was, in prosecutors' summation today, that they don't. They just don't have a working prototype. It's basically, you know, he's selling vaporware, but unlike software, if there's not a physical truck that you can turn on, if you claim you have a prototype, it's false verifiable, right? It's pretty clear what you do and you don't have in the real material world. And it's obviously something that is a very big story for this stock.
You ever see the Broadway musical, The Music Man?
Oh, no, I never have.
Many years ago when I was a kid.
So basically, it's like this small town in Iowa, and this con man shows up, and he's the music man, and he says he can teach all the kids to play instruments using something called the Think System, right? You don't need actual music. Like, you can just play. And he, like, cons the whole town. It's really, like, it's the exact same thing.
Yeah, we should say Nikola's stock off about 15.25% today, down last at close $12.03.
But I believe, Ash, it's above its lows that it reached, 4 months ago. And it's also above the SPAC price before it de-SPAC'd of $10. So hope springs eternal.
Yeah, we should also add that Mr. Milton is no longer with the company and has not been for several months. He resigned as chairman. Let's jump into some more questions here. Here's one from Duck. Any comment on FANGs trading down on earnings surprises just too overbought? I think he's referring to the earnings surprises to the upside and then the fact that they traded down. Jared, that's a good question. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, you know, the classic trading example to that is, you know, when something trades down on good earnings, it's usually bearish. You know, if something trades up on bad earnings, it's usually bullish. You know, on its face, you would have to interpret it as bearish. And it kind of lines up with this reversal we've had in value and growth in the last couple of days. So, yeah, it makes sense to me.
Yeah. See if we can get in one more question from one of our regular viewers, Tom. This is a question for Jared. This is a really fun big picture question, and I'm really curious to hear your answer here, Jared, which is, what are the biggest differences between trading in the 2000s, the 2010s, and now, if any?
You know, trading, if you go back when we had that speculative frenzy about 6 months ago, that was very similar to the dot-com bubble. And it was funny because I'm friends with Ben Eifert of QVR, and we talk a lot on Twitter, but I've also talked to him in person. And he read my book, All the Evil of This World. And he actually took a picture of a paragraph in the book and posted on Twitter talking about how, I mean, this was back in the year 2000. There's a character in the book that was like buying upside calls, spending $5 million in theta a day, but it didn't matter because the stocks were shooting for their strikes. And he's basically like degenerate call option buying on shitcos, like has been around for a long time. So like everything goes in cycles. The 2010s were very, very tough. I mean, I can tell you that sentiment after the financial crisis was negative and stayed negative all the way up until about 2017, you know? So, I remember most of the chatter that you would see on Twitter and elsewhere was bearish chatter, and the market continued to go higher and higher throughout the entire decade.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Thoughts as we wrap, get close to the wrap?
Sure. I've heard Ben Eifert on another podcast say that in the 2000s and up until recently, a lot of the action was in exotic derivatives, sort of stuff that you really can't trade unless you have an ISCA contract or somehow got around that loophole. But now, just because the call buying once again is extremely frothy, there's so much retail volumes and demand for options that a lot of people like Ben Eifert and professional quantitative options traders have left the exotic business to go into the just old vanilla business of called spin puts.
Just to put that in perspective, when I was on the floor in 1999, the total option volume across all four exchanges was 2 million contracts a day. And that was calls and puts, 2 million contracts per day in the whole country. 6 months ago, we were trading 30 million call options per day.
Wow.
Retail.
That's crazy.
I'm sorry if I'm chuckling here. I just saw CG in the YouTube chat. Maybe Uncle Jerome can buy some NKLA bonds. Jared, as we get to near the close, any final thoughts?
I'm pretty optimistic. I think things are going to be turning up here in the next couple of weeks. I'm expecting stocks to go higher. I'm expecting yields to go lower. The last couple of times,
Jared, yields to go lower.
I'm sorry, higher.
Yeah.
The last couple of times I was on, I was talking about how we were in this value correction, and if you waited long enough, it was going to pass. And I said, it's not a bear market. It's a correction, and it's turning out to be a correction. So I'm pretty optimistic going forward.
Yeah. Jack, thanks for joining us. Jared, as always, a pleasure to have you on Real Vision.
Thank you.
Thanks for watching, everybody.